Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air with Cher Huber on KZSU Stanford. Good afternoon, Cher.
Good afternoon, Michael.
Great to have you here.
It's wonderful to be here.
Great.
It's truly wonderful to be here.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
We've been having a lot of great phone conversations lately, and there's just nothing like being in the studio.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful. So give us a call.
If we make it sound that good, everybody's going to want to be in the studio with us, and it's really a very small room, so it's not that wonderful. It's just more wonderful than talking on the telephone, especially from another country and all of those sorts of things.
Yes,
so I feel so,
which can be challenging.
Yes, I feel so in the moment with the radio show, which is good.
Which is a good thing, because that's what we're going to be talking about.
Yes.
Being in the moment.
Yes.
What's that like?
Mm-hmm.
How to get there?
Mm-hmm.
How to know when you're not there?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. So if you want to contact us when we're not on the air, you can send us an email to openair@kzsu.org. You can also listen to archives of all the shows, and those are at livingcompassion.org. And we'd love to hear from you by phone today. The phone number is 650-723-9010. Phone lines are open, and we'd love to hear from you today. Sherry, did you want to talk any more about your recent trip to Africa and...
Well, I was just having a conversation with someone in the hallway about being in Africa. And the question that I'm often asked, of course, is, how was it? And my response is usually, it was amazing. And then being in a conversation with somebody else who has been there, which incidentally, it's like developing a medical condition.
Uh-huh.
You know, possibly one you've never heard of. And then when you get it, you find out almost everybody else has it or has had it or knows someone who has it.
Yes.
And same with Africa. I guess it's just not the kind of thing that usually comes up in a conversation. But now that I go with some regularity, I run into all kinds of people who have been there. And so with those people, it's, you know, it was amazing. And they go, yeah, amazing. And
yes.
Then there's sort of nothing else to say because, you know, what we were talking about is that it's just so different from the world that we live in here. It's like if we were going to talk about what it's like, we'd have to talk about everything, the way it looks and the way it feels and the way it smells and the way it tastes. And so it was amazing, kind of is code for, wow, didn't you love it? Wouldn't you be excited to go back? So the person I was just talking with said, well, let's see, it would take me about 20 minutes to pack. So, yeah, I could leave in about 30 minutes. That's kind of the that's the general feeling.
Yes. And the more I hear about it, the more I want to go.
Yes. Well, I'm hoping that that's happening to everybody because Jen, our Africa Vulnerable Children Coordinator, is busy setting up a retreat for us next year in Zambia, in the places where we were, starting out in Lusaka and then going to Ndola and visiting the house there and meeting the children and then all, spending some time just going around the country and seeing what else there is to be done, seeing the many fabulous things that people are doing there. And so we can arrange it for you. Next summer. And we're also, of course, planning on, we didn't do it this time because there was just too much that we wanted to see for the project. But when we have other people, then we'll also make it over to the falls. And in fact, Jen told me yesterday that she's looking into being there for the full moon because apparently there's a full moon rainbow over Victoria Falls. So we'll try to make it as as action-packed and exciting as we possibly make it.
Yes. And Victoria Falls is in Zambia?
It's on the Zambezi River, which is runs right down between Zambia and Zimbabwe. So an awful lot of people that I know have gone via Zimbabwe in the past, but now Zimbabwe is not an option for travelers or not one that most travelers are taking at this point. So Zambia is a great way to get there.
Wonderful. Wonderful. If you'd like to join our conversation today, give us a call at 650-723-9010. Phone lines are open. Cherry, we've gotten some email questions. While you've been away.
Let's get caught up.
Dear Sherry and Michael, 12 years ago, I walked away from my parents because of the emotional abuse they constantly wielded towards me. I was struggling with an illness, and I did it to gain peace in my life and heal. Recently, I walked back into my parents' life, and for a while, they were kind and loving at times. But recently, they have once again began to be abusive and revert back to their old ways, inviting me up to their house for the week, but telling me I had to sleep in an empty cabin that was musty and difficult to rest in, though they had at least 4 empty sleeping positions in their home. Waking up in the morning and hearing my mom complaining to my dad, saying, quote, she this and, quote, she that, even blaming me for problems that I didn't cause. Believe it or not, I do love my parents, but I know I can't continue to put myself in their presence as long as they continue this. What would be the compassionate way the Buddha would handle this? I'm feeling the compassion needs first to be with myself. There's the pain of loving parents that honestly do not know how to express love by actions, but in fact only know how to express abuse. Is walking away once again the compassionate way for both parties? Could you give me some insight into this? Thanks again. Peace.
I was listening to a politician talk today, and he's a Christian, and he was talking about something that he's doing and looking at everything from the point of view of what would Jesus do, which as a person devoted to projection as a spiritual awareness tool, I always find fascinating. The idea that somebody thinks that they could know what Jesus would do is just astounding to me. And so I am definitely not going to step into the position of making any kind of wild guesses Buddha would do or would suggest or any of that sort of thing. So we're going to bring it squarely back to Sherry Huber, who will take full responsibility for all of these projections. So it seems to me that one of the difficulties that we run into in life, in our interactions with one another, is this kind of all or nothing approach. So I have a relationship with my parents that is difficult. And so I'm either with them all the time or I don't see them at all. And I think that there's a middle way, if we want to. I'm not sure that that's exactly the best definition of the middle way, but there's something in between those two extremes. And that is attempting to find the place that's most compassionate for all. So if I have a difficult relationship with somebody that I do want to be in relationship with, and parents and children and that sort of thing, often coworkers often fall into that category, then I'm going to be looking at how can I find the place that's most compassionate for all. It's not I need to have compassion for myself or I need to have compassion for them. We want it for them and me. No one being left out of the the equation. So the first thing that I would be looking at is way shorter visits. And of course, you know, I believe in neutral territory. So I think often when families get together, if families that struggle, I mean, there are a lot of families who get along fabulously and they go to the same family cabin or they all congregate at the parents' home, or and if they can do that, that's lovely. But if there's strife, then it can sometimes be beneficial to meet on neutral turf. So something as simple as going out to lunch. And then we're not in anybody's home. We're not in circumstances that bring up all of this old childhood conditioning. Everybody's kind of on their best behavior. Most people, many people, can maintain good behavior for 2 or 3 hours. and then everybody part and go their separate ways and, you know, write little thank you notes and it was great to see you, and continue in that way until you're ready to risk dinner. And
and 3 to 4 hours.
Yeah, exactly. And if 4 hours is too much, then then slide it back to 3.
Yes.
You know, if you can go out and get something to eat and then walk down the street and have dessert and a coffee somewhere and everybody can pull that off, that's great. Then you might decide you want to spend an afternoon together, mm-hmm. or you might want to spend a day together. And I always encourage people to find something to do. I was talking with somebody on the retreat last week who was looking at being in the family for the holidays,
uh-huh.
and getting pressure to stay for 3 or 4 days, and expressing to me a hesitation about doing that, because what happens is people have a big meal and then they all sit around, and before long they've descended into childhood conditioned patterns, and they're all picking at each other and being mean and sarcastic and nasty to one another. And I suggested that maybe this person could introduce the idea of going and doing something after dinner.
Yes.
Can they decide on a movie that they would all like to go see, go to the park, throw a frisbee around, go for a walk, do something that takes us out of those historically conditioned patterns of response. So that would be my encouragement. Do a lot of taking care of ahead of time. Don't forget that the odds are good that this is going to be difficult. That's not the same as assuming or setting it up to be difficult.
Yes.
But, you know, we've had trouble getting along in the past. It could happen again. It's not a time to go unconscious. We talk a lot about aspects of the personality, subpersonalities, and a lot of those are children. Don't take the children. You know, if you have a 3-year-old who tends to come out around the parents, then don't take that 3-year-old. You want your most centered self to go there.
Yes.
Which is why I encourage short periods of time, because a lot of us can stay centered for maybe an hour. So if it starts sliding, then it's good to have a trip to the restroom where there's an opportunity to bring the attention back and remind myself who I am and breathe and let it go. And you can even go out and walk around the block and just take a break from it and center again and remind myself this is a workshop. You know, I'm what I'm doing here is attempting to end suffering, bring conscious compassion and awareness, and then go back into it. Don't make it a contest.
So rather than seeing the world as one way or another way, that's sort of black and white. And I thought of duality immediately when you were talking about that.
Yeah. I either have to never see these people again or go spend a week with them.
Yes. Looking for the middle way. What are the alternatives there? Spending a couple hours together. And I thought it was interesting, too, the idea of going out and doing something to get out of those conditioned patterns that we see that come up often being in our parents' home or in our home.
A lot of people talk to me about the misery of the family dining room. That some of their greatest traumas happened around that table. It's interesting to me, the kinds of things that we idealize. So in this country, I think an awful lot of people idealize having dinner together as a family. I think we ought to also idealize having dinner together as a family in a conscious, compassionate, loving manner. Because just sitting around the table together, sort of allowing our worst selves to come out with one another is not supportive of the the kind of family ideal that that we would like to have.
That's interesting, because I when you talked about having dinner together, I thought, yes, I can see that that's a belief that I hold on to. You know, having dinner together is somehow important or valuable.
And somehow magical. You know, it's kind of like...
It's loving and warm and fuzzy.
It's like Christmas.
Yes.
You know, we'll all come home for the holidays and it'll be wonderful. It never has been, but I'm sure this year it's going to be different. And so it's not a matter of, again, going with entrenched beliefs about the past and this. It's just bringing conscious awareness to it, that if I'm not consciously, compassionately aware, then chances are I'm going to participate into this descent into us kind of egging each other on to mm-hmm. be our conditioned selves in relationship yes. with one another.
Yes.
Because it may not be happy, but it might be familiar. Mm-hmm. You know, so we get together, and Mom and I always get into it over the and so-and-so and so-and-so always have too much to drink, and then they mm-hmm. start, well, let's bring conscious awareness to those patterns and start consciously breaking them mm-hmm. so that we can have the best of our relationship together and support one another in moving away from the suffering uh-huh. aspects of the relationship.
Uh-huh. Yes. I noticed, too, when you talked about that conditioning being familiar, and it's interesting how, you know, being happy or centered is not familiar for people
yes.
until they've gotten used to it.
Yes. And yeah. it rarely happens as a group.
Yes.
You know, I mean, once in a while, yes. and most yes. of us, if it's, especially with families, again, that idea that family is the closest, most loving mm-hmm. Relationships for us, and for many of us, it's not. Friends are much yes. closer and more uh-huh. loving and happy. So, yeah. Just bringing yes. conscious awareness to it and considering how we would like to be and then using it as a workshop to mm-hmm. move ourselves away from the way we have been historically and into the way we choose to be in current time.
Yes, yes. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. I'm your host, Michael Gray. We're excited to have Sherry live in the studio here. It's great. The phone lines are open. Give us a call. The number is 650-723-9010. Let your fingers do the walking.
That's
is that
right.
the line?
That's right. Yes. Uh-huh.
Yes.
And this doesn't cost money.
Yes.
Right? So oftentimes your fingers do the walking. That's a business thing, right?
I guess so.
Yeah.
Yellow Pages.
Yeah.
I think I'm dating myself
yeah.
when I...
Perhaps. Yeah. So we're not even asking you to shop here or
yes.
anything like that. So just dial and
yes.
talk to us. Good.
And the power of being in the conversation
yeah.
is really important to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the courage to talk about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I have another email question here. Hi, Michael and Sherry. I listen to the radio show via the archives. I've attended one of the email classes, the most recent one on peace. I have read and reread several of Sherry's books. I practice Zazen with a small local group that stems from John Dado Lori and another small Zendo founded by Anteji Temple in Japan. You may have heard of Kosho Uchiyami from Anteji, who wrote several wonderful books on Zen. My question is, who was Sherry's teacher? I have read 4 or 5 of Sherry's books, looked around on the monastery and Sherry Huber websites, and have begun to wonder, quote, why doesn't she ever mention her teacher's name? I've spoken about this with other Zen practitioners, and we've speculated, but really no one knows. How important is this? Not very. I like the idea that Zazen is the only true teacher. Nevertheless, I'm curious who this great teacher was because Sherry has been a huge influence on my life in the past year. Thank you from one of our listeners.
Well, that's great. How important is this? You can imagine how important it is to me. There are a couple of things about that. When I first began this practice, it was because my teacher is still alive and keeps a very low profile as compared to the profile that I've managed to create. And so in the beginning, I mentioned his name, and then people would find him, and they'd go knock on the door, which is not something that he's interested in. You know, there's so much of that sort of thing in Buddhism now, where people just go from thing to thing and teacher to teacher, and he's not interested in being one more stop in these people's curiosity trip.
Uh-huh.
And so I just stopped mentioning his name.
Uh-huh.
And then it became a thing. It's like, why didn't you talk about it? Maybe she doesn't have one. So then finally I got to, let's just leave it at that. You know, I didn't have one. what are we going to do with that? You know, I just meditated a lot, and then these things, I began to see these things, and I began to talk about them, and people began to relate to them, and it inspired those people to want to practice, and then they did their own practice, and it led to ending suffering, and there we are. Somebody interviewed me earlier in the week, and we were talking about a similar topic, you know, you know, what about lineage, and what about, you know, you have such an unusual approach, you know, you don't do Dharma talks, you don't discuss sutras. And I said, well, you know, at the risk of kind of being a smart aleck, neither did the Buddha. He didn't talk about lineage. He didn't talk about sutras. He didn't do these things either, because there wasn't any. Mm-hmm. And so, why do we need to add that? I don't understand the value of talking about what has happened. Mm-hmm. I truly do not see the value of credentials. You know, I can go to a doctor who has degrees from every medical school on the planet. And if that person isn't a good doctor for me, then it doesn't matter mm-hmm. how many degrees mm-hmm. there are.
Yes.
You know, people do with it what they do. I find it tedious and don't participate. And there are people who will say, well, you know, I'm not interested then. And I think, well, that's a good thing.
Yes.
We're talking about liberation here. You know, we're not talking about popularity contests or, you know, who has a bigger set of credentials. If that's what we're talking about, then to me, it's not Buddhism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Fascinating. It's interesting to me because, you know, what draws me to practice is wanting to be free.
And, that's right.
Yeah.
And what draws me to practice is practice. Not
yes.
sitting around talking about somebody else's practice or how the relationship between other people who did practice. All of this, you know, up in your head to think about this stuff. Or my latest passion is what I talk about is deconstructing the conditioned mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of those activities, as far as I'm concerned, are nothing other than giving conditioned mind something to work with.
Yes.
And
construction material.
Yeah, I just don't see that that's helpful in any way. So if conditioned mind doesn't have any information to go on, if there's nothing mm-hmm. for it to learn, if there's not the latest book to assimilate or the latest theory on that it mm-hmm. can take in, then we're left here in the moment with practice,
yes.
which I think is Buddhist. Is a good place for us to be.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Wonderful.
I think somebody wants to talk to us.
I think you're right. I'd like to welcome Mary Lou. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening, Michael. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening.
Good evening.
How are you guys doing tonight?
Wonderfully well. Thank you.
Wonderful.
Good. Very good. Sherry, I'd like to ask your advice on how, some guidance on how to be compassionate with and maybe help a friend. It's a very good friend of mine, and over the years, when she has disturbing things happen in her life, she'll come to me and we'll talk about it. And it's so easy to see patterns in other people, isn't it?
Isn't it?
Yes.
Would that it were that easy to see them in ourselves.
Yes. Well, sometimes I see them. It doesn't always change them, but I'm getting better at seeing them.
Mm-hmm.
And usually she will say something to the effect about it's a situation that she can't really change, and it's very emotional for her. She'll say, I don't get it. I don't understand. How could he do this? How could they throw this away like that? I would never. And the only thing I usually can do or feel I can do is say, that must feel really bad. And, you know, you don't have to figure it out. Or, you know, I feel like she's torturing herself by running the tape over and over. So I'll say something like that, and she'll kind of calm down and quiet. And then I can almost see her mind will jump to a previous or another situation. And she'll go off on that, and it's usually the same kind of reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm often able to be patient with it. Other times I'm thinking, oh, this is not how I wanted to spend my evening, but I outwardly still listen, but, you know, I know you can't. It takes years of training to be the way the monks and
No.
Oh, goodness.
You know, one of the things. Well, first of all, I want to comment on something that is fascinating to me. So, in my line of work, one of the things that I get to watch a lot is what you describe as. So there's your friend going along, very emotional, and telling these stories about the emotion, which, you know, if the stories dissipated the emotion, we would say, go ahead. Get it out of your system.
Right.
But what you watch is that she gets very identified with this person who's telling the story.
Right.
So it might be, ain't it awful, or oh my God, or however we want to talk about that person. And then there's a moment of disidentification in our way of talking about it. So she comes back to, and you can sort of watch her eyes clear as she kind of comes into the present to look at what you've just said. Then you can watch the story kick in again. You can watch the mind, conditioned mind, just goes to another situation, a story like it, where there's the same emotion. The story starts in again, and she starts working herself back up.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's fascinating to see. And it's fascinating to see it in the sense that this is one of the things we can learn to recognize in ourselves.
Right.
Because we watch conditioned mind do that with us. Yeah, it just wants to tell the story, tell the story, tell the story. So what the monks are doing, and I would say what the monks do much more successfully than I, and that's not any sort of false modesty. It's really true. They are experts at reflective listening.
Uh-huh.
And so I would offer you that to do with your friend. And there are several reasons for it. One, it allows her to have her experience of what you're experiencing. So she gets to, as you reflect her, she gets to hear what she's saying.
Right.
Number two, it slows her down. So she can't just do this torrent of emotion and words that accompany emotion because you're reflecting. Okay. And I never encourage people to try to pretend that they're not doing that. You know, you can say, I just want to reflect what you're saying so that I can stay with you and be sure that I understand.
Okay.
So is it okay if I do this? And she'll say, yeah. And so she gets to hear herself in a way that's helpful to her because most of us, when we're in that kind of rush to express the emotion, we're not listening to what we're saying.
Right.
I mean, we could just be screaming or making nonsense syllables for, you know, for all the good the words are doing. It's just an expression of the emotion.
Right.
Okay. And the most important aspect of this for you is that it gives you something to do while she's emoting.
Yes.
So if you can be a reflection for her, then you need to stay focused. You need to stay disidentified, right? You can't go into, oh, when is she going to get to the end of this?
Right.
So you have to stay focused and present and centered to be able to reflect her. It's great training for you.
Right.
Everybody wins.
And, you know, that's exactly what my experience was of what the monks do. I mean, they were extremely present. Nobody ever told me what to do or how it was going to make it better, but they heard me, and they did kind of say, oh, and so that feels really bad, and when that happened, you this is how what's going on with you, kind of thing.
Yes,
so,
although if I were there with them and they listened to someone talk and they said something like, "Oh, and that feels really bad," I would reprimand them severely. Because they are drawing a conclusion based on their experience, and they are projecting that. So, in the real way to do that is. And so how does that feel? And then you get to come up with the words that are meaningful to you about that.
I see.
Yeah.
And then if she says, oh, I feel like belittled, I feel like everybody leaves me and I lose everybody, then that's where I say, you feel like this is as big an experience as that everybody leaves you and you feel belittled. So I let her.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm sure that's how the monks did. It was just my remembrance.
Yes, I'm sure it was too, because otherwise I have to call them as soon as the show is over. We don't need to do that.
No, we don't need to do that.
Yeah. So then again, she gets to hear herself lay it out and also come to the conclusion.
Right.
And that's really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And she'll hear herself
right.
over time saying the same thing over and over and over, which probably has not happened to her.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. I mean, I've heard it, but I don't know whether she has. So
precisely.
If she says it, and then I reflect it back. And if it sounds awkward, it seems like it would be awkward at first to just repeat. But I guess...
You get used to it.
Yeah.
You get smoother. So so you use so a lot. Okay, so it seems like it would be awkward at first to to just reflect it back like that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we do. So you just make it as casual as you can. You sew a lot. It's just questioning, questioning. And because most people are not listening when they talk,
right.
very often you can do it and the other person has no idea that you're doing it. They just think you're really perceptive.
Right.
Like you can read their mind.
Right.
You seem to know exactly how they feel.
Yes. Yes. That's very helpful.
Good.
I think, you know, because I have felt a little helpless lately. I've been spending more time with her and,
yep.
you know, the phone
and
will
enjoying
ring
it
and
less.
I'm like, oh, the Olympics are on. Should I answer the phone or what? You know?
Right. Yeah. This will give you a way to participate.
Yes, and as you said, to stay present instead of thinking about what I'd rather be doing.
Yes.
So that's a double goodie.
Double whammy.
Yes.
Very good.
Okay. Well,
thanks,
thank
Mary.
You very much. All right. Bye bye.
Thanks for joining us, Mary Lou. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. Coming up at 6 p.m., we have DJ Decca. Some great world music. She always has. New and wonderful stuff. And then at 9 p.m., we have the Bot of Euphony. The phone number here is 650-723-9010. Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you today. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back in a moment. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. The phone number here is 650-723-9010. Sherry, I'd like to mention a couple places you're going to be traveling at, speaking to people. You're always everywhere.
Going somewhere tonight to North Carolina.
Tonight to North Carolina, to beautiful Rose Creek.
That's exactly right.
Sounds like a beautiful place.
It's a lovely place. Well, it's in the mountains of North Carolina. There's just no place there that isn't lovely, as far as I can tell.
Yes, yes. And then, coming up on Friday, September 17th, you're going to be at the Open Secret Bookstore in San Rafael, California, for an evening talk, and that's at 7:30 p.m. And then, October 3rd to 8th, you're going to be back at Esalen.
Yes. With Krista Rippens.
Krista Rippens.
I think she's going to be doing yoga and Pilates and somatic movement,
mm-hmm.
and I'll be doing the Zen awareness part, and we're going to be looking at strong emotion.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
Strong emotion in body, mind, and spirit. You know, something occurs to me. I don't know if we have it listed, but on September the 8th, I think it is, which is a Wednesday evening, I'm going to be at the Unity Church right here in Palo Alto. They're doing a piece seminar.
Yes.
So people want to check that out. They're feeling peaceful and want to come hang with some other peaceful folks.
Mm-hmm. Wednesday, September 8th, 6:30 p.m., Unity Church of Palo Alto, which I think is on Middlefield.
Middlefield. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Correct.
Yes. Wonderful. And then you're going to be heading up to the Northwest.
That is correct.
Seattle
and Bellingham, Washington.
Wonderful.
And then I'll come back for the event of the season. Of the century. Yes, October 23rd and 24th at Herbst Pavilion, Fort Mason.
Herbst Pavilion. And that's Saturday, October 23rd,
mm-hmm.
all day.
Yep.
There's more information.
More information on the website. Yeah, big event that evening, fun stuff with music and silent auction. And then, of course, our third annual walk across the Golden Gate Bridge to benefit the Africa Vulnerable Children.
Yes, and that'll be Sunday, October 24th.
I'm hoping people will come from around the world and we'll gather together and just have a grand time.
That would be exciting. Mm-hmm. And the website, of course, is livingcompassion.org. Mm-hmm. Continually updated, lots of great info. There'll be info about your Africa trip up there.
Yes, very soon with pictures and, yeah, we're excited.
Exciting. Let's talk to people.
Okay.
I'd like to welcome Nora. You're on Open Air. Nora, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hello.
Nora, you came on with great sound effects.
Is your radio on, Nora?
Yes, it is.
Can you turn it off, please, or down?
Sure. How does that sound?
That's better.
I'm sorry. I thought you had said turn your radio up. I'm I misunderstood.
Well, it had a big effect. How are you?
I'm doing well, and I've practiced Buddhism in the past, but I've never heard of you, and I really like your approach in the sense that it's more practice than, you know, lineage. So thanks for opening that venue for me.
Uh-huh.
And so now I also know your website. It's livingcompassion.org, right?
Correct.
Great. Fantastic. So I had an issue. I am trying to be compassionate with a friend of mine who's elderly and who seems to have bouts of paranoia. She believes that people are entering her apartment and rearranging things and also going to, you know, other places and entering her place and rearranging things. And I'm trying to get her to see a doctor, but since she thinks it's other people who are doing this, it's hard for me to motivate her, or that's number one. And number two is, how do I deal with, or how do I work with her when she's in this state of fear?
Let me ask you this. When does she think this is happening? Does she think it's when she's away from her apartment, or does she think it happens when she's there?
Both.
Uh-huh.
I've stayed with her once overnight, and she couldn't find her keys, and she was sure that they had come in and, you know, misplaced the keys or stolen her keys. And then when she found them, she felt a little calmer. But sometimes even when she finds things, she thinks that they've just rearranged it.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And so what is you're encouraging her to go to the doctor.
Right.
And so what is the issue? Is it upsetting for you? Is it what's the difficulty? Because you know, since I'm not there in the situation, I could say, well, you know, what difference does it make if she thinks that?
Right. Well, thank you for turning it back onto me. It's actually a relative, and I have a long history with this relative, and it sometimes scares me. And at first, I was trying to tell her that, you know, what she was saying was not true. But then I was told that I shouldn't do that, that I should go ahead with her reality and in some way speak to her emotions rather than to what she's saying.
Yeah. One of the things that occurs to me as an opening into that is to ask her if there's anything that you could do, that you could help her with, that would make her feel, help her to feel more secure.
Okay.
In other words, if you were to help her put extra locks on the doors and windows, if you were to help her get a security system, so that if she needed anything, she could have, you know, whether she goes along with this or not, it's an opening into a conversation about what's going on with her. and might be a way to get her to talk about. You know, if you're sort of agreeing that there's an issue here, then she might be more willing to talk with you about what goes on with her. That it's really frightening. That she's feeling diminished capabilities and more vulnerable and that sort of thing. So it might be worth it to approach it from the perspective of whether it's real to us or not, it's real to her.
Right.
Yeah. And so how do we address that very real issue in her life? Okay. So
okay.
Try that.
Okay.
And then let us know.
Okay. Sounds good.
And we'll take the next step.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Nora.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. The phone number here is 650-723-9010. Got about 15 minutes left, and we'd love to hear from people. And I'd like to welcome Kate to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Hi, Kate.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hi, Kate.
It's this interesting thing. I'm watching a new thing in my process as I'm sitting on hold and waiting to come on to the radio show, which I think is familiar, of indecision.
Now, is that, should I keep holding or should I hang up? Is that the kind of indecision?
Well, it gets that. It starts with, should I talk about this piece of content or this piece of content?
Uh-huh.
And then it gets to, oh, I can't decide, so I should hang up, which is a really familiar process around... Somehow there are all these options, and I don't know shows up. I don't know. And there's this belief that since I don't know the right answer, that I can't.
Uh-huh.
Because I couldn't possibly make a wrong decision.
Well, can
I... And then I bow out.
Yeah. You want to play a little game with it?
Please.
Okay. So there are a lot of little games that you can play with this, actually. But one of the things that you can do is write down all of your choices on little pieces of paper.
Okay.
So, you know, I could talk about this, I could talk about that, I could talk about that. Well, this is important, and that's going on. So you jot them all down on a piece of paper, and then you put them in a container, and you pull one out. And that's the one you're going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Or, if there's somebody else around, you could say, you could jot down what your choices are, and you go A, B, C, D, E, F. And then you say to the person who's walking by, would you choose a letter between A and F?
Mm-hmm.
And they choose a letter, and that's the one you go with.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, what you watch happen, this is what we talk about as torturing your conditioned mind.
Yeah.
Right? Because all that indecision is going on, not because you could make a mistake, not because you're going to be happier if you get the right thing, but just to make you miserable. Yeah. So this is just turning the tables on conditioned mind, taking that little cruel little game away from it. And it also is reinforcing for you that there's no right thing to talk about. You know, you have all these issues. Well, they're probably all the same issue, since for most of us, that's the case. You know, there's this thing and this thing and this thing. And what's the common thread there? And usually they're all designed to make me suffer. That's the common theme. So you just pick one and you deal with it. And then, you know, you can call us back next week and deal with the next one. Or you can go to a retreat and bring up the other three. So, you know, you make your list and then you just start going down through it. And not entertain those voices that are just there to add the confusion and the distraction and the dissatisfaction that comes from, should I this, should I that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Should I go see this movie or that movie?
Mm-hmm.
Well, clearly I'd like to see them both. So I'll see one tonight and one tomorrow night. Well, you can't go to the movies two nights in a row. Now, where is that written? You know, only 10 things came down on the tablets.
That's the, how do I know that? Isn't that the one that, I was just thinking of the, because that's the thing for me, is it's just this constant blah, 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 blah going on.
And, yeah.
I can remember that tool of saying, is that true? How do I know that?
Yeah, how do I know that? What, who said so? Who made that up? Yeah. So anytime a conditioned mind is trying to back you into that kind of corner, just don't get in the corner. So, you know, should I talk about this? Should I talk about that? And then what you did was the really very slick awareness practice thing. You talked about the process itself, which is always the best thing to do.
Hooray.
It's never going to let that happen again so easily. I can promise you that. But that's,
well, I didn't hang up, did I?
That's right. And that's always the best choice. So, you know, I encourage people who are dealing with self-hating voices, instead of, you know, the voice is saying this and I feel bad about that and I'm trying really hard with this, but then, you know, I get judged for that and I get beat up because of that. And you know, just walk up to the first person you find and say, could I just tell you for a minute what the voices in my head are saying? And they get really, really quiet. Of course, so does the person that you just walked up to. And they often walk off. But that's okay. And if you can find somebody around that you know, and especially somebody who knows about a process like that, then that's great. Just, you know, start every sentence with, let me just first tell you what the voices are saying. They don't want to be revealed like that. So always to focus on the process itself. That's that deconstructing conditioned mind that I was talking about earlier. Instead of conditioned mind being in charge of telling you all this stuff, what we're doing is turning around and scrutinizing conditioned mind. And it makes it extremely tense and anxious. But it makes you feel so relaxed and free, which is actually what we're going for.
That would be nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, don't you feel more at ease about this than you did when you were sitting there on hold?
Well, it grabbed on. I was just watching it grab onto that. Always, I should always be, it just grabbed onto, I should always be focusing on process, and started to beat me with that.
Yes. And you see, you did it again. You revealed it. So you just reached over and pulled the rug out from under it.
And so what do you do if you're by yourself? Do you just say it out loud?
Yep,
or
you can
write
say
it down,
out loud.
Or
you can say it into a tape recorder. You can write it down. You can email it to a friend. You can call somebody and tell them. Yes.
And then is there something that happens next?
No, nothing happens next.
You just don't believe it.
You just don't believe it.
You see it, you don't believe it, and you keep going.
You come back to the breath, and then the next thing will arise. But after you do it for long enough, that you begin to see through the system. Because what you're doing, again, instead of letting conditioned mind direct your attention to various things that you should be thinking and that you should feel bad about and that you deserve to be beaten up over, all of your attention is on that system that's saying these things.
Okay.
And as you do that more and more, your attention is on conditioned mind as it tries to control your world. And its ability to do that begins to disintegrate.
So it's almost like you're in this, I'm just getting this image of being in this room with a troublemaker. And you're doing your thing, but you're always keeping your eye on that one.
That's right.
You're not letting it stop you, or
That's right. You're just doing what you're doing.
You're not kicking your eye off of it either.
That's right. That's exactly it. And sometimes it's just out of the corner of your eye. That's exactly right. So you're in a classroom with a bunch of 13-year-olds. Okay, so you know your best interest is not at the top of their priority list. So even though you can, in that case, you can be quite fond of them and working for their best interest and all of that sort of thing, but you're not going to take your eyes off of them.
And still you're not against them either.
And still you're not against them. You're just aware.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Wow. What a great call.
Yeah. We've talked to some great people with some very helpful reminders
issues that they're working on that when they call in and we get a chance to talk about are helpful reminders to all of us about how to drop that conditioned orientation to life and get back to the present where things are smoother.
Yeah, that was exciting. There are a lot of, just the focusing on the process and coming back to the process, revealing the process again. Wow. And it's fun.
It's really fun. And it's really interesting. And most of what conditioned mind is talking to us about is not fun or interesting. It's
boring,
tired,
repetitive.
Yes. So watching it, seeing through it, it's just, it's like Aikido. And I think Aikido is such a good image for it because it's not, we're not aggressive. We're just really kind of moving out of the way and allowing conditioning to do to itself what it's been trying to do to us. And so it, you know, ties itself in knots and throws itself on the mat, and we just kind of watch it happen.
Yeah, the words that come to mind are attentive and responsive.
Yeah, because before, you know, conditioning would come up, and we would tie ourselves in knots, and we would throw ourselves on the floor. You know, because it actually can't do anything to us. We have to cooperate and do it to ourselves. So it's kind of fun to just step out of the way and let it do that whole routine alone.
Alone by itself. Yes. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. We have a few minutes left if you'd like to give us a call. The number is 650-723-9010. Sure, the other thing that occurred to me when you were talking to Kate is sort of a good reason to be paranoid.
Right.
Paranoid might be too strong a word.
Yeah.
But
that old, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you, which is what, you know, with Nora's friend. Okay, yes. Yeah, I'm a little paranoid, but how do I know that these things aren't actually happening? And so it's good to stay present and focused and...
Yes.
And, not assume that, that we know the full picture.
Yes. And I loved what you were talking about in terms of deconstructing conditioned mind and the idea of picking one out of the hat. And I've heard you talk about that before in terms of, like, you know, major life decision. Just put them on A, B, C and pick them out. And it just cuts everything out.
Yes.
You're not given any story, any time.
Yeah.
Which is just what conditioning wants to do.
Yeah. And of
Tell
course,
you that story.
Right in the beginning when we do that, conditioning just goes wacko because where's the drama? And you could make a mistake and this is too serious. This you can't just pick a number for heaven's sake. And then you just watch that and go, yeah, well, actually I can.
Yeah.
Because the only thing that's going to go wrong in my life is conditioned mind. And so, you know, if I'm free of that, then there's nobody to tell me that was a mistake. And without somebody to say it's a mistake, there aren't any. There's just life.
Yes. Sherry, we have a quick question.
All right.
I'd like to welcome Chris. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi. I was just curious as to whether Sherry's going to be doing Dharma talks during the retreat this week in Western North Carolina. And if folks that aren't able to attend the retreat are allowed to attend the Dharma talks in the evening?
Certainly. Well, they won't be Dharma talks, but they are my version of Dharma talks, which is an open discussion with everybody who's there. And absolutely, people are welcome to join us in the evening. Just have to let us know that you're coming. And it's often, if a person can manage it, we ask that you come for the last sit of the day, which is usually at 5:30, and then have snack with us, and then stay and attend group. Now, if you can't get off work or, you know, you just can't make it, then you're certainly welcome just to come to the group discussion.
And what time will group be at?
It'll probably be 7:30 the first night and then 7:15 the evenings after that.
Okay, thank you very much.
And you could just notify the monastery and let them know what night you'd like to come. You're welcome to come to all the nights.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for calling, Chris. And if people want information about the monastery, the website is thezencenter.org.
Which was not a matter of ego for us. We really don't think it's the only Zen center. We would have had a Zen center, but it wasn't available.
A Zen center was not available.
No. You know, our organization is actually called the Center for the Practice of Zen Buddhist Meditation because I just don't like the, as if
the
you're the
center.
Only one.
I am the center of the universe.
The Zen center.
Yes.
The yardstick by which all Zen centers are measured.
Yes.
But it is www.thezencenter.org.
.org. Yeah. Great. I think our hour is up.
I tell you,
just like,
you know, when you're spending time with fascinating people, it's as they say, it just flies right on by.
So, time flies.
Yeah. So, good Lord willing, I'll get back from North Carolina along about next Tuesday and stop by and see you, and we'll plan on doing this again so people can just watch their practice all week, watch very carefully what goes on with them, and then when they notice something, they can call and we can have a conversation about it.
Anything you in particular you'd like people to be looking at this week?
Practice. Yeah. Huh? Being in the moment and what stops me. And maybe even some good techniques for remembering, for waking up and realizing that you've wandered off.
I see. So people could call in with techniques that they have.
Sure. Things they've noticed.
Wonderful. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. I'm your host, Michael Gray. I'd like to thank all of our listeners today, all of our callers. Jay and Andy have been stellar in the studio. Yeah.
I like that.
That just kind of popped up.
Yes, that's very good.
If you want to reach us in the meantime, you can send us an email to openair@kzsu.org. Archives of all the show are at livingcompassion.org. Coming up next, we have DJ Decca with some great world music, and then the Bod of Euphony at 9 p.m.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Michael.
Good night.
Good night.